This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Dee Mason, and Dee is going to introduce our next guest.
Am I, Macca, though?
Yeah.
Our next guest is the editor of The Conversation, which is one of my very favourite news sources in the actual world. It is, of course, Mitcha Ketchell. Mitcha, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you,
Dee? Oh, I don't have you in both ears. Here we go. I mean, could the technology fail us? No. No, we might have to get a better line for Mitcha.
Yes, well,
no.
No, it's sort of, we're going to ring you back, Mitcha.
Have you ever worked on community radio, Mitcha?
Yeah, just bear with us. We'll ring you back.
We'll give him a call back. But one thing I did want to mention to you, of course, what is your go-to news source?
Look, pretty much The Conversation is one. I have to be honest, I've gone off The Age.
Oh, mate. The Guardian?
The Guardian, I've taken advantage, and it's not really a plug. The New York Times have a digital subscription that's $1 a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Washington Post is a similar amount.
Yeah.
The Guardian.
But doesn't it bother you, Macca, that, because I also have New York Times, Guardian, I don't have the Post, but I do so hate it that there's not one curated news source that I can trust, where I can get all the... Well, and particularly when you read a lot of editorial and you need to get a variety.
I think SBS is pretty good.
Yeah.
As television news.
Online, yeah.
And online. Look, I'm disappointed in The Age in some of the content.
I'll see you're disappointed in some of the content and raise you a disgusted with the lot.
Yeah, look, as a general policy, I don't read anything from News Corps.
Mm.
And that's spelt CORPSE. I just find it really challenging. Some of the journalists, and look, you know, opinion is opinion, and things that I say are an opinion.
Well, the good thing about having access to The Conversation, and this is going to sound like an ad, but it's not. But I remember when it came online, and I think it's about 10 years ago now that they started The Conversation. As soon as it came online, I thought, this is actual scientists, researchers, academics that are actually qualified to talk about this. So everything you read, I feel like, yeah.
It's independent, it's verifiable, it's current.
It's academic.
And it's relevant, and it's academic.
Macca, hi, Dee. We're going to try and do something special here. We're going to put Mitcha on the mobile and see if we can get it through this mic. So hopefully you should be able to hear Mitcha. Just 2 seconds.
$20 says it doesn't work.
You there, Mitcha?
Hello, can you hear me?
It's have we actually tried Paul sending Mitcha the studio number, getting him to ring in?
We have, Macca.
And that doesn't work either.
Okay. Can you just put him on clean feed? Can we do that?
Not in 2 seconds.
Okay.
So we'll try speaking to you, Mitcha. So first off, what stories have you got coming up? But what have been the issues that you've really dealt with this week?
Well, I'm hoping you can hear me okay.
Yes.
Yep, good.
One of the major things we've been looking at is actually the marches that are going to take place on Monday. Given the level of anger at the government's sort of approach to women across a range of issues, really. And we've got an academic who is looking at the polling numbers for the Liberal Party, and it actually turns out that the 2019 election was the worst result the Liberal Party had had in terms of female voters since 1987. So they only got 35% of the female vote. And it's looking like, given the level of current anger and frustration, If that persists, the marches won't be the only problem for the coalition. They actually might be punished at the ballot box as well.
Misha, who is organising? Who's behind the Women's March on Monday? Because it's not just in Canberra, it's Australia-wide. And is it every parliament house in Australia?
It is Australia-wide. I'm not sure if it's every parliament house in Canberra. It's one of those things that sort of has risen up quite organically and quite quickly. It actually arose from a tweet by one woman who was musing on what it would take to get the coalition government to pay attention to these issues. And she was speculating around how many people it would take to sort of hold hands around Parliament House and get attention. And I think the number they came up with was 4,000 people. I'm not across the details of what's happening across the country as a whole in terms of exactly where all the marches are and, you know, who the sort of organising forces behind it. Because it's one of those things that's happened just so incredibly quickly, and it seems to really reflect an uprising of a sense of very real anger.
Misha, do you think, you know, from the perspective I see it from, is this, you know, this outrage and this has been building for a while, and that women in politics and you know, let's be clear about this. Labor have had issues, the Greens have had issues, the Liberal Party, the National Party, all political parties have had issues. The only one that doesn't, from what I think, is probably the Reason Party, because it's only two women. But the reality is that women are feeling, you know, very, very dissatisfied with the political process. And that's just also the people within those parties. But it's the way that these allegations, you know, all these allegations, no matter where they've come from that have been dealt with, has actually brought this to a head, and it's not going to go away. And I don't want it to go away, but it's not going to go away, is it?
I think that's right. But there's also an issue that's quite particular to the Liberal Party. I mean, there's been a longer-term trend over the past 30 years or so, which has seen a real change. Traditionally, women were more likely to vote for the Liberal Party than Labor. And that relationship has really reversed over the past 30 years and quite significantly in more recent years. And it might be partly to do with, for example, the fact that the Labor side of politics has increased its female representation at a more rapid rate. But, you know, that general level of anger that is being felt right now, these types of issues, they can dissipate before voting day. So we're expecting an election later this year or early next year. And sometimes these things can burn very hot, and then the level of dissatisfaction can abate and people can sometimes vote on other issues. But my sense is that there is a very real long-standing anger at this particular government over its overall approach to women's issues. And there's a whole bunch of things, like the failure to have a gender audit in the budget. You know, there's a range of policy settings that don't really reflect the needs of women. And then there's all the cultural issues as well, and the way all of those things are handled. And I think when you put all those things together, it is a very big political liability for the coalition, and particularly for the Liberal Party within the coalition.
This is terribly bad timing for Prime Minister Scott Morrison to have this issue come up, particularly given that he could not have lost this election if the vaccine rollout went according to plan. Or even if, just because he feels like, all our personal opinions aside, he feels like a wartime Prime Minister, very hard to lose an election if you've carried a country, even though he didn't, through the pandemic. This to come up now, could this change all of that?
Yeah, it's one of those things that's very hard to say. Of course, right now it feels like it could, but there's a long time between now and the election. I think most insiders in Canberra are now saying not later this year, early next year. So there's a lot of water to go under the bridge. And you only really need to look at how unpopular Morrison was before the coronavirus hit, over his handling of the bushfires and the ways those issues were affecting the government negatively, and the way that the coronavirus process basically wiped that away, wiped that effectively to a large extent from the political memory and rehabilitated him for many voters. So it's hard to say, but I mean, absolutely right now, that, you know, the consequences are are very severe. There's a very hot level of anger. And personally, I can't see it going away entirely. And so it is a real risk, you know, for the government.
It's very interesting talking about gender lines on this, that Scott Morrison has pretty much got off scot-free, pardon the pun, with the whole Hawaii and Hawaiian shirt situation during the bushfires. But Christine Nixon will never be forgotten for having a dinner. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of...
And going to the hairdresser.
Well,
he doesn't need to go to the hairdresser.
I mean, that is an essential, mate.
I think that's true. I would say, obviously, you know, Christine's a woman and Scott Morrison's a man and, you know, to some extent there might be a gender bias at play there. I would also say that we just got to be realistic about the way tabloid media works. Yeah. And, you know, a story about going out to a dinner or a hairdresser, I think would always be a story no matter what the gender of the person. Yeah. Just because it's the sort of thing which is very sort of visual, it's going to capture people's imaginations. It looks sort of like deserting your post at a time of great need. So although there probably was an element of gender in it, I'm not sure that that was, you know, entirely determinative on that one.
Yeah. But deserting it on the high street and not in Hawaii, actual Hawaii.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. And also, I mean, I think the thing that counted badly for Morrison was, you know, the visuals of that. You know, it was very vivid as well in its own way. And, you know, there is a sense in which those stories which create really clear images and a really clear way of conceptualizing something, they really do cut through. You know, I mean, one thing by contrast that's worth talking about is, you know, all of that sports rorts pork barrelling, which was, you know, really quite outrageous in terms of its use of government money and its processes. Things like that actually, to some extent, can get forgotten quite quickly. Although, interestingly, that's sort of been brought to the memory again this week with the announcement of the government's plans to fund half the price of airfares to certain destinations.
Now, Misha, I want you to hold that thought about flights to marginal seats. What we're going to do is we're going to ring you back. We think we've got our phone line working. So just when I finish speaking, hang up and we'll ring you back on the other method. You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9. We will... we're still having some technical issues, but
We should move to St Kilda.
We should
iron this stuff out.
We can go down to we can go down to Misha's lounge room, and we'll do it there. So Misha Ketchell, editor of The Conversation, we're talking, Misha, about the this latest lot of flights, which I called the let's call it get a marginal seat holiday package. I find it really challenging that Victoria, the only airport that you can fly into under these subsidised flights or fly out of is Avalon. Now, in case no one had noticed...
Corangamite?
Yes, yeah. But Virgin don't fly to Avalon.
Oh.
Qantas, I don't think, fly to Avalon. Jetstar does.
Oh.
So is this scheme, should it be called, well, I suppose, let's be generous, Qantas Keeper?
Welcome to the conspiracy hour with with Macca McCarty.
What do you reckon, Misha?
The thing that's very clear about this plan is that it is going to subsidise flights to areas like far north Queensland or northern Queensland and northern Tasmania, where the impact of coronavirus on jobs has been relatively muted. Like, there has been a jobs impact, but it hasn't been as strong as many other areas. Yet they are areas where there are marginal seats. So you are seeing a sort of an uneven distribution of the government's largesse. And the real issue with this is just that they've got so much form in this area with sports rorts and, you know, their general sort of approach to spending money that I think people are quite entitled to be sceptical about what the real motivation is behind it.
Remember how gentle sports rorts felt compared to all this? Like, that was like the good old days. Just whiteboards and craziness, spreadsheets and craziness. I haven't done a deep dive, Misha, into the half-price flights. Can you just give me a nutshell of what is happening?
Yeah, so basically the government's announced that it's going to subsidise half the cost of an airfare for people who are travelling to certain destinations. And one of the rules is you have to cross I think with some exceptions, but mostly you have to cross a state border. And the idea is to encourage people to travel and spend money in Australia to support the local tourism industry, which, you know, I mean, overall is a good thing given how affected by coronavirus the tourism industry has been. But in setting up this scheme, the government's put some very strict rules around which areas qualify, which air routes and which ones don't. And when you start to look at it a little more closely, one of the things that you'll notice is, as an academic who looked at this for the conversation, right, there's a fair whiff of pork in the way in which the money is being distributed in terms of which routes are getting the funding.
A bit of pork. A bit of
pretty
pork.
Pretty closely with some marginal seats.
A bit of pork. Is that a pork nice barreling. Segue to you know, to trotters in the trough?
In view of the fact, Misha, that there's been a new mystery case in, well, it's not a mystery, it was presumably contracted at the hospital in Brisbane, is it too soon to be offering half-price flights and getting everybody back out across state lines? What happened to the whole just move around within your state?
It's a good question. I'm not sure, given the level of control we have over coronavirus in Australia currently, that actually interstate travel is a problem. I think there are a lot of systems in place now. You know, compared to the rest of the world, Australia is doing extraordinarily well. It's sort of interesting, actually. We have the conversation is part of a global network. So we've got teams in the UK, the US, Africa, France, Spain, Canada. And we have regular phone conversations with our colleagues. Yeah. And when we talk, it's just extraordinary how tough they're all doing it. It's still, you know, there's a lot happening in France. It's going very badly. There's still a lot of restriction in the UK. Things are very tough in Africa. Like across the world, people are really struggling with, you know, still quite difficult coronavirus situation. And in Australia, we are incredibly lucky. We really do have very high levels of control in place. You've seen with the short, sharp lockdowns, the capacity to control the virus where there are outbreaks. So I'm not sure that one case in Brisbane would be enough evidence to make you think, okay, we can't do this or this isn't appropriate. I think the question more is just about the political motivation behind it and how funds that are being, you know, purportedly spent in the name of supporting the economy and supporting the tourism industry are actually being redirected for political purposes.
I think if we felt we could trust this lot in any way, I would nationalise. D. Mason would choose to nationalise the control of the coronavirus. And I know that you know, greater minds than mine have been put to it. But it's such a weird thing to have ended up divided by state lines because, you know, as we know, that's not the way the virus... Like, WA is a massive state to lock down just because of you know, an outbreak in a certain quarter of it. So, I mean, I'm buoyed by the fact that the Andrews government's in charge of our particular response in that way. But is it something that the academics are calling for, like the people in the know? Is there a big push for nationalisation of border control?
I don't think so, but not because that isn't the most desirable outcome. It's just because I think people understand how hard that would be to achieve. I mean, Australia's a federation. We have been since we federated. And, you know, that compromise where all the states came together to create, you know, Australia as a nation, we're still feeling the effects of it. And you can see it in the politics around something like coronavirus and the ways in which Daniel Andrews was criticised, you know, perhaps unfairly by federal counterparts and some of the tensions around that. But it's not something we're going to solve in the short term. So we just have to work around it.
But that whole parochial states wanting to secede, like Waxit and things like that, that wouldn't have popped up again. Last time that came up was in the 30s. So they're just sort of, they're like, well, we're doing it ourselves, so why don't we just bugger off?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, but don't forget that there is a real political incentive for state premiers to be seen to be being, you know, super in terms of protecting their constituents. And, you know, you need to look at Western Australia. They're going to the polls today. And Mark McGowan is miles, streets ahead. I mean, it's a very unusual election. And he's incredibly popular because of his stance of protecting Western Australians. So it's a complex political compromise, which I totally agree isn't entirely ideal. But it's just something we have to work with at the moment.
I've watched with some interest, Misha, what's going on in Western Australia and the opposition leader there, Zach Kirkup?
Zach Giveup.
Yeah,
I
well,
think
yeah.
the way you pronounce that.
And, you know, him basically, you know, he became leader because they were, you know, the West Australian lower house members of parliament were all driving around in a minibus. And the first one, you know, to stand up became leader, something like that. But, you know, what he said about, you know, we're not going to win this, and then this is actually about holding Labor to account. And, you know, I have a bit of admiration for him. You know, he actually stood up yesterday and they asked him about a poll in his own seat, which he holds by 0.3% or something, that said that there was a 20% swing to Labor.
Against him, mate.
Now, I find that really interesting. You know, he is, you know, some of the things he said and done, he is not, he's certainly not in the mould of previous Liberal leaders from WA. I really don't, I'm not close enough there to know what's going on, but I think his strategy's been quite interesting. Pretty much, okay, guys, you've made me leader. No one else wanted it. The ones before me have left under a cloud. So I'm the leader, and I'm actually going to do this. And apparently there's been a lot of, you know, people getting quite upset with him. But what's your take on it? I found it really fascinating. I find him an interesting guy. He said, look, if I lose, that's politics for me. Goodbye. Like, you know. What do you reckon?
I think it's a really, it's been a really smart play from him because basically in a situation like this, it's all about expectation management. It doesn't really matter how much you lose by. If you lose by less than people expected you to lose by, you've won in terms of being able to claim that you've had an impact on the outcome and being able to maintain your leadership position with your colleagues. So from his point of view, both in terms of succeeding in the campaign, sometimes the underdog status can help you if people think it's going to be a landslide, but also in terms of managing the expectations of his colleagues and keeping his position. It's actually a smart play, if a little unconventional, to be so strong as to say you realise you're going to lose. I mean, normally what politicians try to do is dance around saying those exact words but sort of implying it, whereas he was just a little bit more blunt perhaps than you'd normally see.
He was more dead dog than underdog, though. I mean, when he came out and said that, I thought, oh, this is a trick. What's he playing out here? But no, I think he really thinks we're going to lose. But if he – this is the thing. If you bring a young and enthusiastic and presumably quite intelligent politician up at that age – and give them all that responsibility. If they lose that seat, you cannot let them give away that career. Like, because it's not actually his doing, is it? It's just a very poorly run, well, party, but also campaign.
You know, they've got 13 members in the lower house in WA. So if, for example, they come out of this, you know, with 8, oh, it's a disaster. What about if they come out of it with 18?
That's right.
You know, so
he's trying to set up, I think, which is he's been given a task that is effectively unachievable. But as long as he can say that he's chipped away at it and he's made some progress, it will stand him in good stead for the future, I think.
Just never know why he said, look, we can't win this, it's lay down, instead of saying, do you know what, it's an unwinnable election, but what we really need to do is hold these people to account. McGowan's got away with all this stuff.
But he's sort of done that. You know, he initially he said, look, you know, we're not going to win. And then a day or so later, he said, this is actually about holding Labor to account because there is an upper house in WA. And if the Liberals lose control of that or the numbers work against them, yes, you have a government with a majority in the lower house and the numbers in the upper house.
I think McGowan does have the numbers in the upper house, though, doesn't he?
No, I don't think so. I think it's you know, upper house, you know, I think that it's finally balanced. So I think it's going to be an interesting outcome, Misha, to watch tonight. I think it's either going to be one way or the other. It's either going to be a complete debacle for the Liberal Party or they'll pick up some seats. I do think McGowan, the misstep when he proposed keeping the border controls in to keep meth out, and he backpedalled on that fairly, or, you know, you're talking about drug dealers and stuff. Yeah, yeah. But it was like, hang on. Are our police so ineffective at fighting drugs that they can only fight drugs, you know, when there's a big fence around our state? Come on. He backtracked on that pretty quickly.
I mean, observing from a distance, I think the one thing that you can say is that, you know, it's always better in terms of the democratic process overall to have something where one party is not streets ahead. So from that point of view, you know, he's hoping that there is a result that, provides a little bit element of accountability for whoever wins.
And why they didn't come up with a super coalition over there? Like, is it, it's Lib Nats, isn't it?
Yeah, but you see, you know, the National Party in WA is a little bit different
right.
to the National Party in the rest of Australia. They did a deal with the previous Liberal government, money for the regions, basically. They would support them. They would support the Liberals. They're not in coalition.
Right, okay. Right.
Yeah.
They're preferencing each other, presumably, but not enough.
Well, yeah, but look, I just think it's a bit of a sideshow, but it's interesting because politics are being played a little bit differently. And that's a real challenge. For the Liberals. Yeah, it's a real challenge for the Liberals. Paul's giving us the thumbs up, which indicates we might have our technology back.
I like this string can thing.
Oh, yeah, it's good. It's good. Now, Misha, golf.
I didn't say anything.
Hitting a ball, a little defenceless ball with a stick. What's the attraction?
Oh, look,
Come on.
I can see this coming from a mile off. I have nothing to say. I am guilty as charged.
Oh. What do you wear, Misha?
Look, clothes.
Clothes? What's your handicap, apart from playing golf?
Yeah, so that's the standard joke. And, you know, I am somebody who is pretty deeply uncoordinated, so I pretty much have all of them. I'm not very good at golf, but I do enjoy it. and I heard I'd been outed as a golfer, and I have to, you know, confess that I'm guilty as charged.
It just says to me that the incredible diversity of golf.
That's right.
That the last person in the world that I would have thought would play golf, apart from me.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
But you should see D play.
Is you, Misha. Like, one day, you know, hundreds of people will be sat down at, you know, hole number 14 watching you putt.
Can I say, Macca, like, golf is seen as connected with a whole bunch of
tosses.
Stuffy, horrible, tosses. Selfish conservatives. And Dee and me and a whole bunch of people, we're trying to reclaim it for people with a more progressive mindset.
That's
and
right.
I think that's the way you've got to see it.
So you're very progressive when you whack that little ball with your big stick.
In fact, this weekend we're all going to link hands around the 14th hole.
Oh. Well, we're out of time, Misha. I'm going to leave you and our listeners with the thought of you playing golf. It's going to sit with me for some time.
Sorry, Misha.
No worries. Thanks, everybody, and well done with the technology.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.